Welcome to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia, and my co-host, Dr. Danielle Scherer of the Medical University of South Carolina, is on the line. The question before us is, why are you about to order that test? The Annals of Internal Medicine this week published an article listing about 40 tests that a panel of internists agreed are often used in a way that does not reflect what the authors call high-value, cost-conscious care. For example, using MRI rather than conventional mammography as a screening test in average risk women, or doing imaging studies in patients with nonspecific low back pain. The work was sponsored by the American College of Physicians, which convened a work group to come up with the list by consensus. The first author of their report is Dr. Amir Kasim, and he's our guest today. Dr. Kasim is Director of Clinical Policy in the Medical Education Division of the American College of Physicians in Philadelphia. Welcome, Dr. Kasim, to Clinical Conversations.
Thank you so much, and good to be here.
There's quite a long list of presumably bad testing situations. Can you tell us briefly what causes a good test to become a bad one?
Yes. So what we're trying to do is, in this paper, is essentially promote a thoughtful discussion among physicians, patients, and other stakeholders about common clinical situations where there are opportunities to improve the quality of care for the benefit of the patient. And the reason behind this, a little bit of a background, is we all know the cost of healthcare is rising unsustainably. There are issues with employee contributions to healthcare premiums. They're going up. There is strain on families, employers, governmental budgets. And there are several reasons for these rising healthcare costs. As you know, there are advances in diagnostic and therapeutic interventions and technologies, longer lifespan, administrative costs, patient expectations, and then defensive medicine due to the risk of liability. And the concern had been for patients and clinicians is whether or how to control these costs while maintaining or improving the quality of care. And what we're trying to do over here is what can we do to decrease the cost? And one component of these high costs is the overuse and misuse of various diagnostic and therapeutic interventions. And it's important for clinicians to evaluate the benefits, harms, and costs of the intervention, and then translate them into these components into the value of the intervention. One thing I do want to just specify over here, I think the most important thing is we want to differentiate between the cost and value. Mm-hmm. A high-cost intervention, an expensive intervention, may provide good value, mm-hmm. since the benefits of the intervention may outweigh its harms. But on the other hand, a low-cost intervention may provide low value, although it's cheap, but it's still low value, mm-hmm. because the harms may outweigh the benefits. Mm-hmm. So the point is, look at the value, evaluate the benefit, harms, and cost of intervention before ordering any of the tests.
There was an editorial by the editor-in-chief of the Annals in which she cites a Congressional Budget Office number saying that 5% of GDP is spent on test procedures that don't improve patient outcome. That's a huge problem, because let's do the math. If medical care accounts for about 15 to 20% of the GDP, and 5% of the GDP is spent on wasted tests, that means about a third of what we do, what clinicians do medically, doesn't benefit the patient. Is that a reasonable assumption to make?
Those numbers don't really surprise me that much, because I think there is enough of unnecessary testing that's being done. And then if you look at it, I think that most of the DC policies, they are targeting decrease in reimbursement, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're addressing the cost of care at this point. That are these essentially the costs that the numbers that you just quoted right now, because of the overuse and misuse of various diagnostic and therapeutic interventions, they are not really being accounted for, and it's like a really low-hanging fruit. Hmm. And that's what we tried to do in this paper. The point is, as I said, of this paper is that we want to start some thoughtful discussion among physicians, patients, et cetera, about some of these tests that we believe are being overused or misused. And then there's, for some of these tests, there is enough good, high-quality evidence that that we should not be ordering some of these tests. So, for example, if you take imaging in low back pain, 85% of the patients that come to the practice, they usually have non-specific low back pain, which essentially means the cause is probably strain on bones, muscles, no joints, ligaments. There is no neurological reason or there is no pathological reason for this low back pain. And there is substantial improvement in these symptoms, and pain usually goes away in a few days to a month with just plain old medications and exercise. Imaging tests, they just do not have any impact on the outcomes or functional status of the patients with uncomplicated low back pain. But and actually, you know, something to keep it in mind, some of these tests, like routine imaging, it can lead to series of further unnecessary additional tests, follow-up, referrals, may lead to invasive procedures of questionable benefit that do not improve patient outcomes. Mm-hmm. You're exposing patients to radiation, which may increase the risk of cancer over time. So essentially, the point is that we need to keep some of these downstream costs and harms in mind as well. And whenever a physician is ordering the test, they need to keep it in mind that what am I going to do with the results of the test? Mm-hmm. Am I going to change my management in any way of this patient if I order this test and I get the results of the test? So these are the things I think we need to keep it in mind. Just going back to the point you were making, yes, I am not surprised that there are the high costs that are associated with overuse and misuse of some of these diagnostic and tests and medical treatments.
Many of the diagnostic tests on the list stress that we should be asking, obviously, about the patient's symptoms or some of the exam findings as a reason not to order the test. In your opinion, how much of this diagnostic testing do you think is being driven by the waning of our physician history and physical exam skills?
That's such a good question you're bringing up, I think. We all realize that this advances in diagnostic and therapeutic technologies are one of the reasons for this rising high healthcare costs. And I think when CT scans, all of us remember, because CT scans came recent past, before that, history and physical examination was very well taught in the medical schools as well as during residency programs. Now I think over the years, it's easier for everyone to order a CT scan rather than take a good history and physical exam. The stress has been less and less over the years. And I think it's really, really important issue you're bringing up. I think it's definitely a component, and we need to keep it in mind. And going forward, I strongly, firmly believe a good history and physical exam can help rule out a lot of things.
And of all the ones that ended up on the list of these 37, were there any of them that were notably controversial within the discussion group?
No, none out of these 37, because the process that we followed was essentially, you know, that we all essentially agreed whether to retain a test in the list or not. And I can tell you one thing, that these are the tests we felt like are really low-hanging fruit, like practically, you know, very, very low-hanging fruit.
Like kind of a no-brainer, like don't be tempted ever.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think that any of these tests should be controversial, but you probably noticed that on Annals website we have posted a link for a survey as well, because I wanted to get a feel for physicians. And actually, that survey is open for patients as well to get a feel for whether they agree or they do not agree with what we're saying or not, I think. And I think it's important to see. But anecdotally, though, I can tell you that we have talked about some of these tests in the past as well at various national conferences, medical conferences. And generally speaking, many of the physicians do agree. And physicians very well understand that some of these tests are being overused and misused.
I wasn't really surprised. I totally agree with you. I wasn't the least bit surprised when I read through these. I'm like, yep. We overdo that. We got some reader reactions back when we covered it in Physicians First Watch. And one of the things that struck us was sort of this, you know, well, how do I tell my patients no when they've heard about this test, you know, on TV or a brochure or their next-door neighbor? So the question is, the other corollary is, how do we engage patients in conversations about value in an understandable way, that they don't feel like they're being deprived of necessary testing and that we're not only doing it for cost containment purposes?
And I think that is that's a very important issue. And I think that if a physician sits down with their patient and explains that here's a test, and here are the benefits, and here are the harms, the cost part, I think, is there, but that's like an additional benefit we're getting out of if we stop ordering some of these tests. But if you sit down with a patient and explain, well, here are the benefits and here are the harms, and if the harms are more likely that they're significant enough and a patient understands those harms, I don't think any patient is going to say, I still want to go get that test.
Right.
Because ultimately, you know, the patients don't have time either. How many of the patients would like to go to a hospital or wherever they get these tests, sit in a line and wait to get a CT or MRI done and go back again? All of us want to avoid, on an average, generally speaking, an average patient does not want to go to see their physician unless there's a reason.
And then you mentioned at the end of the article that the Clinical Guidelines Committee of the ACP is planning to delve a little bit further into some of these and analyze the evidence base for or against these diagnostic tests. Can you give us an idea of which one of those may come first, or is it too premature?
No, definitely. I can give you a feel for it, because these tests are essentially, as you noticed, that these tests are published in the Ideas and Opinions piece. We don't have any supporting evidence typical of a ACP clinical practice guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So we are addressing some of these issues in more detail. One of the papers that came out was last year that addresses the low back pain.
Yes.
We also have a concept piece where we get into a little bit more details about what we mean by benefits and harms, how to address some of the issues with patients, and how to talk to the patients. So the topics that are coming up in near future, you're going to see are generic versus non-generic medications.
Oh, sure,
Neuroimaging and headache.
Uh-huh.
Upper endoscopy in patients with GERD. We're going to be including these best practice advice with other guidelines such as colorectal cancer screening, prostate cancer screening. And I want to clarify one thing with what Guidelines Committee is doing. We are not just talking about overuse and misuse.
Yeah.
We are also going to be addressing the underuse as well. The point is, as a physician, we need to do what is best for our patients.
Matched the evidence with the practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we are going to address the underuse as well. So we're working on a paper on advanced care planning, for example.
Sure.
So I think that the point is that some of these, we need to just make sure that whenever we are ordering these diagnostic tests or whatever therapeutic intervention we are utilizing, it needs to be beneficial for our patients and should not be causing harm.
You mentioned the survey, Dr. Kasim. How is it still open, and have you seen any of the results?
Yes, the survey is still open, and I haven't really looked at the results yet since it's still open, but I am not really sure how many folks have responded at this point, but
mm-hmm.
I think there has been a significant flow of traffic. And we are actually going to have this survey at our annual scientific meeting. Our upcoming Internal Medicine 2012 is going to be in New Orleans.
Huh.
And I'm going to have a survey over there as well, because I want to hear it from physicians. What do they think?
Yeah.
I think it's really important to get a feel. So not only we're asking the physicians whether they agree or they do not agree, we're also asking for other areas of overuse and misuse. This is just a list of 37. As I said, the point is to start, all of us to start thinking about some of these common clinical situations where there are opportunities where we may not be doing providing the care for which may be beneficial for the patients. There are several other areas we can all think of.
Okay. I'll put the URL for the survey on our website so that people can get to it. Do you have, you talked a bit about this before, and maybe that was sufficient, but if you had any parting advice for a clinician, this is what you did last week as far as testing went. What new attitude should they have next week, having heard this interview and having perhaps read the paper?
I think the most important one-line thing, I think, is as simple as this. Whenever we order any test, we need to keep it in mind, ask ourselves, what am I going to do with the results, and will it have any impact on management?
Okay.
We just need to keep that one thing in mind, and that should help us all out in terms of when it comes to the benefits and harms, evaluation of benefits and harms of the tests we are ordering.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Kasim, for talking with us today. It's a very interesting conversation.
Thank you so much for covering this very important issue.
That was our 142nd edition, and all the earlier ones can be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, which is an excellent way, really, to keep up with clinical research whose implications are likely to affect your daily practice. Our executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time for myself and Dr. Danielle Schurer. Thank you for listening.